On episode 130 of TritonCast, we'll be joined by West Coast Conference Commissioner Stu Jackson. We'll get into the Tritons' move to the WCC, which takes place just 1 year from now. We'll chat about how his role has evolved with so much change in college athletics in recent years. We'll get into his time at the Big East and working for David Stern at the NBA, and what it was like starting an NBA franchise north of the border. Stu also reflects on an all-star staff he assembled for a March Madness run when he was head coach at Wisconsin. West Coast Conference Commissioner Stu Jackson is in the Triton Spotlight this week on TritonCast. Welcome to episode 130 of TritonCast, the podcast for UC San Diego Athletics. I'm Jeff Turiel. Hard to believe it was 6 years ago today that we released our first episode. Thanks so much for sticking with us. And whether you found us on UCSDTritons.com or on your favorite podcast platform, thank you for joining us again this week. Now, before we get to this week's Triton Spotlight, let's go around campus. You'll hear a lot about the importance of basketball on today's episode. With the Tritons set to report to campus over the next 10 days, check out the 2026-27 men's and women's basketball rosters on UCSDTritons.com. The Major League Baseball draft is also only a couple weeks away. Read up on 14 Tritons who are playing summer ball. And there's a terrific feature on recent grad Sophia Bell, who's taken to open water swimming. Fascinating stuff. Well, now it's on to our Triton Spotlight. 1 year from today, UC San Diego enters a new era when the Tritons join the West Coast Conference. In this conversation, WCC Commissioner Stu Jackson explains why UC San Diego is a great fit. He also opens up about the challenges in today's Division I landscape. We'll chat about the NCAA tournament expansion to 76 teams, and he shares a great story about working under legendary NBA Commissioner David Stern. Plus, we'll get into Stu's favorite part of the job. Here's our Spotlight conversation with West Coast Conference Commissioner Stu Jackson. Stu, let's start here. How would you describe the role of the conference commissioner?
I like the view myself, to use a basketball terminology, as the point guard in the midst of all of our key stakeholders. And that includes, you know, our presidents, our athletic directors, our SWAs, and our faculty academic representatives. I'm the person that tries to make sure that they are given the information that they need, that they understand the ever-changing environment that we are all experiencing in this day and age of collegiate athletics. And for all of those stakeholders, I represent two really key items on behalf of the conference, and that is its national visibility, and secondly, revenue and how we go about generating it. So you put those three roles together, being, you know, revenue, visibility, and being the point guard in the midst of all of that. Generally, that's how I view my role.
And so as the point guard, as the leader of the conference, how do you and your staff, how do you make things flow when maybe membership isn't always aligned on one matter or another, those kinds of things?
Well, one of the things that we try to do is just make sure we shake our memories. And our memory is that they are our clients. Our member institutions are our clients. And as a conference office, we are working on behalf of student athletes and their experience. And if everyone can get back to that baseline, as we constantly remember and remind them, any decisions or obstacles or disagreements that we have really come back to that central foundation. And if we keep that in mind, you know, we can move forward strategically and do what's best for this conference, specifically the student athletes. That's how we try to do it.
So you've been on the job at the West Coast Conference for a little over 3 years now. A lot has happened in college athletics in the last 3 years. How has the role changed since you took over?
No, it's a fair question. And quite frankly, the position that I have as commissioner of the West Coast Conference is not the one that I signed up for. you know, for our listeners out there, you know, over 3 years ago, when I accepted the position, the notion of revenue sharing with student athletes was definitely on the horizon. Everyone knew it was coming. We didn't know what form it would present itself, but we all knew it was coming. But what we could never have anticipated is the effect on the collegiate landscape that the transfer portal and national realignment has had on college athletics. So, and that was a bit of a surprise and really unanticipated in terms of both those areas. And that's what makes the position a little bit different than the one I actually signed up for.
So having to react to that, how have you and your staff, how have you pivoted to support your members in this time of pretty big upheaval?
No, you know, we've really tried to be both opportunistic, Jeff, and strategic. You may remember, if you followed the West Coast Conference, as early as December in 2023, we added Oregon State and Washington State from the Pac-12. Following their dismantling, we added them as affiliates in December of 2023 across 12 sports. That partnership was the only one of its kind, whereby you basically had two Power Five institutions joining a mid-major conference across that many sports. So that was in an effort to both strengthen ourselves competitively and also, you know, just bolster, you know, the depth of our conference on all levels. Then, you know, about that time, you know, there had always been rumors about the fact that Gonzaga may be leaving the conference. And by adding Oregon State and Washington State, at least it was a show of thinking a little bit strategically in effort to strengthen our conference, maybe at some small level to incentivize them to stick around a little bit longer. After that, we added, you may recall, Grand Canyon and Seattle University in May of 2024. But then, you know, realignment hit us again in that Grand Canyon decided to withdraw from the conference, you know, that year as well. So we found ourselves at that point looking at being a 9-member conference going forward, which was not a position we really wanted to be in. You know, Gonzaga left in October of 2024, then Grand Canyon withdrew from the conference in November of 2024. And it was an interesting time for our conference, and we needed to really come up with a plan to, again, stabilize our conference. And we did that, first adding the Tritons, you know, in, I believe it was September of 2025. Then we added Denver in October of 2025. Then subsequent to that, UC Santa Barbara in April of 2026. So we added another 3 members in sight of 7 months. And now where we sit, when you all, UC San Diego, enter the conference in 2027, we will be at 12 members, which is the largest the West Coast Conference has ever been.
Yeah, fascinating times for sure. I'd imagine that membership, largely speaking, takes up a lot of your time, right? Like whether it's retaining the members you have, whether it's deciding who else might be a fit. How do those kinds of conversations come together? And is it a constant topic?
You know, unfortunately, it was a constant topic for nearly 3 years. And it wasn't a topic only within the conference office, but amongst our members. The dynamic of realignment is really an interesting one in that when you lose a conference member, it's just a natural reaction among other members to seek, you know, elsewhere, whether or not they can create a situation that's more advantageous for them than the conference that they're currently a part of. And that's unfortunate, But again, it's human nature. We understand that. There's no sense dwelling on it. We just have to focus inward and, you know, control what we can control. And that is to make our conference the best that it can be. And we felt like at some level, we've done that. And being at 12 members, seemingly today being very stable going forward, now we can turn our sights to, you know, the things we should be. And that is thinking strategically about how we increase this conference's national visibility, how we enhance the competitiveness of our conference, how we continue to brand ourselves in a post-Gonzaga era. And we actually did that, recently by rebranding ourselves, leaning into the regionality of our conference, the fact that we think innovatively, focusing in on the student athlete experience. And we came up with the saying that we rise in the West, and we truly do. And that's going to be our mantra going forward.
I love that. Let's look at UC San Diego and then later UC Santa Barbara joining the conference 1 year from now. The West Coast Conference has primarily been comprised of private institutions. So why was UC San Diego and then a few months later, UC Santa Barbara, why were those two institutions fit for what the conference is building?
Well, in an effort, again, to, you know, adjust to the realignment landscape, we looked at over 43 schools, Jeff, that we evaluated across, you know, some criteria that were important to our presidents. And at the end of the day, we realized that while the West Coast Conference historically had been primarily private and faith-based institutions as their mission, we could no longer limit the market of schools to just that genre, right? So we had to expand our thinking. But we wanted to expand our thinking, keeping in mind certain principles that or pillars that were important to us. And one was maintaining academic credibility, focusing in on schools that perform athletically. We wanted to lean into our geography in the western part of the United States, and we wanted to lean into institutions that, in our estimation, truly were committed to student athlete wellness. So expanding our pool or our market of schools and utilizing those pillars, in our minds, UC San Diego was a natural for the West Coast Conference. That's how we felt. But we didn't know how that you all would feel. But fortunately, we were able to come to an agreement where we were able to invite and fortunately have UC San Diego accept an invitation into the West Coast Conference.
In the early part of this conversation, we've talked quite a bit, obviously, about basketball and the success of basketball, not only historically in the West Coast Conference, but the importance of basketball success. How important is competitive success in men's and women's basketball moving forward to the West Coast Conference?
It's extremely important. The model that we have with respect to funding our operations and our championships throughout the conference across all sports is significantly dependent upon our ability to perform in men's basketball and hence women's basketball going forward with the addition of the basketball units on the women's side. So it's vitally important. And that when we talk about being basketball centric, we mean it. We're reliant on our performance as a conference to make sure that our conference continues to maintain that high level of standard of championships across all sports.
You just touched on it, but can you go a little deeper on how competitive success in basketball can catapult and affect other sports that you sponsor?
Yeah, success in basketball, I mean, you have to recognize what it is. Particularly in men's basketball, when you are successful, it not only brings visibility to the West Coast Conference, but what it can do for an individual institution really is boundless. And in some respects, not always quantifiable. When you have that, if you're ever fortunate again to have the experience of being invited to the NCAA tournament, what that means for UC San Diego is tremendous in terms of marketing, in terms of branding. Not that you all have an enrollment issue, but you'll get even more candidates than you have before. But it brings a bright light and recognition on all things academic at UC San Diego, because people are curious simply because you've had some success bouncing a ball and putting it in a hoop and being showcased on national TV, you know, across the globe. It's significant, not always quantifiable, but the value, you might even say it's difficult to put a price on it.
All right. So let me ask you, as a basketball lifer, and we'll get into your background in a little bit, what's your opinion on the expansion of the NCAA tournament to 76 teams?
I'm bullish on the expansion of the additional 8 teams for a number of reasons. At its baseline, I support giving more student athletes the potential experience or a potential championship experience. I think it's tremendous. Selfishly, for the West Coast Conference, I also view expansion as an opportunity. Having the additional 8 teams in the tournament does not necessarily mean those teams are all going to come from the Power 5 conferences, and I'm including the Big East as part of that Power 5. The data shows that in any given year, 1 to 3 additional mid-major teams would have made the tournament over the last 5 years. To me, that spells opportunity for the West Coast Conference, given the way that our conference is positioned behind the Power 5 basketball conferences. So there's opportunity for revenue, which is financial gain. So for all of those reasons, you know, I'm really bullish on expansion. And at the end of the day, Jeff, we're expanding the what will now be called the opening round on Tuesday and Wednesday. But when we get to Thursday and Friday, the tournament is going to look the same as it always did at 64 teams. So for a 2-day period, it's going to seem a little different. I think there are going to be some very compelling matchups during those 2 days that we haven't seen in the past. But when we get to Thursday and Friday, the tournament still remains the same.
No, that's so interesting, and that's a good way to put that. Bringing it back to the West Coast Conference, adding Denver now gets you to 10. And as you told us, adding UC San Diego, UC Santa Barbara a year from now will have the conference at 12 for the first time. What might scheduling look like in conference as a 12-team conference? And what about access to championships?
It really depends on the sport. But in the sport of basketball, we engage, again, our stakeholders. And I'm talking specifically the athletic directors, the head coaches in the sport of basketball. And, you know, they've spoken and we've listened. Even when we go to 12 members, we'll still likely have an unbalanced schedule in basketball. And that provides benefits in a couple ways. One is it allows each institution continued flexibility to go out and seek opponents during their non-conference schedule that potentially would help them metrically gain access into the NCAA tournament. Now that we have 32 games instead of 31, the ability to schedule 32 games year long, both conference and non-conference, that flexibility is extremely important. Secondly, you know, during the conference season, if you end up having 12 members, playing 22 conference games is a little bit much. It cuts down the flexibility of the non-conference, and it's just too long of a conference season when you're trying to build metrics, having to play everyone twice along 22 games. So we think staying in an unbalanced schedule is more advantageous to us, and that's the plan going forward.
Our guest on TritonCast this week is West Coast Conference Commissioner Stu Jackson. You came to the WCC from the Big East, where you were Executive Associate Commissioner for Men's Basketball. What was that role? What was your role when you were at the Big East, and how did that prepare you for being commissioner for the first time?
Yeah, it's interesting. My title includes basketball or basketball operations at the Big East, but fortunately, I worked alongside a leader in Val Ackerman, who gave me, permission and allowed me to work across many areas in the Big East Conference aside from basketball, like, player programming. So I had an opportunity to engage in a number of programs and actually play a vital role in the programs that involve student athletes, which was very rewarding. And what I'm talking about is, we started a first year student athlete program called Freshman Fundamentals at the Big East Conference, which then translated into Transition Game on the women's side, where we would bring student athletes into, New York and just provide them programming around things that they felt would be important to enhance their four-year experience, three-year experience, two-year experience in the Big East Conference. And that was really rewarding, having an opportunity to play a vital role in the Big East's program called Be the Change, which focused on social and racial justice, was something that was personally, rewarding to me. But having the opportunity to head up, running the Big East tournament and, at Madison Square Garden, all those years, a richly rewarding experience and understanding what championships were about. And dare I say, that might be the best basketball championship in the country. But all that being said, being involved in basketball operations, such as scheduling, officiating, certainly the technical side of it, whether it be instant replay or tech on the bench, having to establish and maintain relationships with coaches, athletic directors, and presidents. All of those things I thought really helped me build a foundation for becoming a commissioner. But if that wasn't enough, I've had some past experiences in my professional life, having worked for what I still believe is probably one of the greatest commissioners in sports. When I worked at the NBA for David Stern, all of those experiences have really helped guide me to a place where I felt I was ready to become commissioner of a major national level conference like the West Coast Conference.
Yeah, I was just about to ask you about your time at the NBA with David Stern. And what's a favorite memory or two you had of your time working at the NBA HQ?
Yeah, I have so many memories. I haven't spent nearly 14 years there. But and I think those memories, the best memories that I had were really the lessons that I learned. One of the most important lessons I learned from David Stern actually occurred because I had two stints at the NBA, one for a 2.5 year period in the 90s. And then I came back later in the 2000s and stayed for 13 and a half years then. But I remember when I first went to the NBA, David Stern had given me a project, and call it what you will. Maybe it was a test. Maybe it was a test to see what I was capable of. And the project was, at that time, was to analyze the behavior of NBA preseason scheduling. Okay. Each NBA team could schedule 8 preseason games, but he was unhappy with the way that they scheduled because he felt that, our members, the teams, were spending way too much money, too involved with promoters, having unnecessary travel, paying exorbitant fees, and all this. So he said, listen, I want you to analyze this and come back with a recommendation, which I did, Jeff. And I thought that, you know, I engaged a lot of people at the organization because you never want to work in a vacuum. And I came back and it was D-Day. And I was going to make this presentation to David Stern, and it was one-on-one before we took it out to the other stakeholders. And I sat down in his office. I'd given him a copy. And then again, this is, you know, in those, that in-between period where you went between laptops and computers and hard copy, I had a hard copy for him so that he could follow along. And it was quite a thick booklet. And I hand it to him and he says, have a seat. And I sit down and he says, okay. I said, well, David, I think, and he stopped me at I think. And he says, what do you mean? You think you don't know? You just gave me a booklet. You don't know? You think? You know, I don't pay you to think. I pay you to know. So at that point, took that out of my vocabulary when making presentations. And but he was making a statement that, you know, one, setting a level of expectation of people that, you know, reported to him, and also just setting a level of excellence. And it was a valuable lesson, you know, albeit a small detail that stuck with me for a long time.
Yeah, that's amazing that you remember that level of detail all these years later. So once you got past the, you think, did he like your presentation?
He actually did. He actually did. He had some, suggestions, you know, but they were more of a formatting suggestions. But the content seemed to cover what he had hoped that it would. So I walked out of there, you know, with my chest out, feeling a little bit better, you know, only to just make some small changes. And then away we went.
I love that. I also want to ask you about your time with the Vancouver Grizzlies, getting that organization off the ground. You were president and GM when they were founded in 94. How do you, or how did you, build a franchise?
Whew, boy, yeah, great experience. Built it from the ground up. When I was hired by the owner of the Vancouver Grizzlies at the time and I arrived, there was really no infrastructure at all. And we had about a year and a half before we began actually playing NBA games. And when I got there, they were in the midst of what they referred to as a ticket drive, which amounted to basically 10 to 12 young people sitting in a room on phones trying to sell tickets. That's all we had. So when I say that's all we had no communications department. We had no community relations department. We had no basketball operations department. We had no basketball legal staff. We had no basketball analytics department. We basically didn't have anything. So, but I'll tell you what, it was probably one of the most fun times throughout my career, because from that point on, it was all gas and no brakes for the next year and a half, year and two-thirds, building up to our opening night. We, you know, built an organization, a very, I thought, a quality organization. We met our NBA mandated season ticket minimum of, I think it was, gosh, 12,000 season tickets or something ridiculous like that. When you're talking about selling the NBA basketball in a country that only knew hockey. But we were able to create, you know, the branding, enough excitement and enough buzz to get people to buy season tickets. And what a spectacular night it was on opening night. But it was a slog. You know, I have to be honest, just getting the organization together.
I can only imagine what must have gone into that and a lot of the long days and nights that you had leading up to that. What were your emotions when the ball finally went up on opening night and the franchise was real and they were playing in the NBA?
Yeah, there was emotion unbounded. I mean, not only by myself, but the staff who, you know, many of whom were not only performing their responsibilities, but many of them were Canadian, you know, having to climb a steep learning curve in terms of what the NBA and the NBA experience were really all about. And it was really a sense of accomplishment by everyone, and just a thrilling time, not only that night, but that first season.
Let's bring it back to the college level. You've been a college basketball coach, a number of stops. How has coaching collegiately changed from when you were doing it to now, or even really honestly in the last several years with the introduction of NIL, et cetera?
Oh, it's you know, without saying, I mean, it's changed tremendously. I often say to myself, I don't know how coaches at this level do it. I'm not sure I could have done it. You know, the fabric has changed so much in that I always feel that when you coach, you make a decision to lead. When you coach in college, you make a decision to lead because you truly can effectuate student athletes at a formidable time in their development. And that can be based upon, you know, your program and how your culture is, what the style of play is, how you utilize an individual to give them success, how you begin to shape, you know, a young man who comes in as an 18-year-old and leaves as a 20, a 21, or 22-year-old. That focus is sort of changed because of the transfer portal and NIL. My sense is that many student athletes now focus in on how much revenue they will receive, and also playing time. When I coached, there were other factors involved. Student athletes in the sport of basketball paid attention to things like the school, the academic reputation, the style of play, the coach that they were playing for, how would they develop over a multi-year period in an effort to chase their dreams and hopefully achieve something great, like maybe making the NBA. Those were always the focus. Today, I just get the sense more times than not, it's how much. And that's unfortunate. It's unfortunate because I don't think that that should be the focus. I think that student athletes, by not staying at an institution for an extended period of time, void themselves of relationships that, you know, will follow them throughout, you know, their, not only their professional life, but their life in general. And that being lost is unfortunate. And you really lose something at, you know, coaching at this level because of all those things today.
So when you were head coach at Wisconsin, you took the Badgers to the NCAA tournament. It was the first time in almost five decades. What was that like cutting down that net?
Yeah, no, that was unbelievable. And we did it in a very short amount of time. You know, when we arrived at Wisconsin, you know, I had a great staff there, Jeff. I don't know if you recall, but I retained one assistant coach by the name of Ray McCallum, who had been at Wisconsin before I got there. He's a lifelong assistant in the NCAA and was the head coach, I believe, at Ball State at one point. But then I also had on my staff Stan Van Gundy, Sean Miller, Brian Hecker, who's a special advisor for 25 years to Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra, Tim Buckley, who went on to become an NCAA head coach. I mean, I just had an unbelievable staff. And, you know, my senior manager was James Whitford, who went on to become a head coach himself. So I didn't realize at the time how fortunate I was, but they in part were the reason we were able to bring that program to a level as quickly as we did inside of two seasons because of the hard work that they did. And I'll never forget the day, you know, on Selection Sunday when they announced Wisconsin's name for the first time in 47 years for the NCAA tournament. That feeling that I had watching our players enjoy that moment is one that I'll never forget. I'll never forget it. And I haven't felt anything that euphoric other than the birth of my children. I mean, it was just such a special moment and one that I'll always cherish.
You told us that you hadn't been there very long, but was there for you a sense of relief because of the burden, the weight that the program had felt for 47 years?
Well, you know, I didn't feel the weight. I don't think we felt the weight. What we felt was just a genuine desire and drive to move this program forward in a way that they hadn't moved in a very long time. I mean, Wisconsin was a football school, you know, and at times they weren't even a very good football school. No one ever gave them credit on the basketball side. And, you know, we were hell-bent on changing that. And fortunately, we did. And the rest is history at Wisconsin, because I think anyone would say that currently, from that point on, they've been a basketball powerhouse on the national landscape.
Yeah, that's really cool. We're in our final moments with West Coast Conference Commissioner Stu Jackson this week on Triton Cast. For you, having been commissioner for a little over 3 years now, what's been your favorite part of the job, either a specific moment or broadly speaking?
You know, I don't have a specific moment. I would say this, that whatever issue we have in our conference and whatever initiative that we're pursuing or whatever progress we make in a governance area, which sometimes is like pulling teeth, the moments that I always cherish are at each one of our championships that I attend, in seeing student athletes' elation in becoming a champion. Like, we all don't get a chance to be a champion very often in our lives. But we know that during those moments, if we're fortunate to become champions, there are moments that live with us forever. And that's very rewarding, to play a role as a conference in helping bring that experience to student athletes across our conference.
Well, Stu, thanks so much for joining us on Triton Cast, and we look forward to working with you and seeing you often as we approach July 2027.
Yeah, no, thank you for having me. I enjoyed it.
So much to look forward to about the move to the West Coast Conference in 2027, and that'll be here before we know it. Our thanks to Stu Jackson for joining us and for his candor. We look forward to seeing him back on campus in La Jolla again soon. Well, thanks for listening this week and for the last 6 years. Don't forget, you can find us on all your favorite podcast platforms by searching Triton Cast wherever you get your pods. And a reminder, you can listen to any of our 130 episodes anytime on demand. Just visit ucsdtritons.com/podcasts. Coming up soon on Triton Cast, we'll check in with UC San Diego Athletic Director Andy Fee as he approaches the one-year mark of his time in La Jolla. Be sure you're subscribed on your favorite podcasting platform so you don't miss a moment. New episodes of Triton Cast premiere on Wednesdays. For more on Triton Cast, follow us on X at Triton Cast. And if you have a suggestion for a future guest, send us a tweet or email us at tritoncast@ucsd.edu. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to Triton Cast. Triton Cast is a production of UC San Diego Athletics Communications. Please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast on your platform of choice. If you have show questions or comments or suggestions for future guests, email us at tritoncast@ucsd.edu. You can also follow the show on Twitter @TritonCast.